From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Milwaukee, or rather, suburban Milwaukee, a town called Waukesha, a town probably a lot like Pittsford, for example. And there, sitting in her car in her garage, a woman rested her head on her steering wheel and began to cry. She cried not because she was unhappy or because she had a difficult life. She cried because the opposite was true. She had a beautiful home. She wanted for nothing. But she had just spent time with a mother in Milwaukee who didn't know if she could feed her own children. A mother who had to make those gut-wrenching decisions about food or transportation or medicine. The woman who felt moved to tears was Susan Dreyfus, who is today the president and CEO of the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities. Susan asked herself why she so often has allowed herself to judge others, to think, you know, if they just made the same decisions I did, they'd be in the nice house too. Maybe their poverty is their fault. The door is open and they could easily walk through it to a better life. Well, Susan's organization has become a network of social sector organizations with a national reach. She's coming to Rochester for a couple of events later this month, in just a couple of weeks, and we'll tell you about those coming up. One's a community conversation at the Memorial Art Gallery on October 26th. The day before that, October 25th, she will be at the Charles Settlement House's 100th anniversary celebration and awards luncheon to discuss the ways that people can reach their own potential. But first, she's our guest on the line on Connections with us. And Susan, it's great to have you. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Evan. Thank you. I have to tell you, hearing you tell that story, I didn't know you were. It brought tears back to my eyes and some very significant memories. Thank you.
Well,
nice to be with you.
It was great to have you. We'll get right back to that in a moment. Let me also welcome our guests in studio with us. Scott Benjamin is president of Charles Settlement House. Welcome back to the program, Scott.
Thanks, Evan.
Also with Scott is here in studio is someone who was had the services of Charles Settlement House in her earlier days, then went on to do some work for them and is now working at Lifespan. That's Nikita Matos. And Nikita, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And here is Patricia Leo. She's Director of Community Impact for the United Way, and nice to have you as well.
Thanks for having us.
And Susan Dreyfus is on the line with us, who is the President and CEO of the Alliance for Strong Families. And Susan, we told that story. I wanted to tell that story off the top because when you told it at one of the many presentations I've kind of been able to check up on that you've given online, you know, it was moving to me as well, because I've probably been in that position where you think about, well, how come my life is so much easier than someone else's, and can't they just make better decisions too? Take me back to those moments and tell the audience a little bit more about what was going on that day and what led you to that moment.
Well, I was the administrator for the Division of Children and Family Services for the state of Wisconsin, and we were deep in child welfare reform work, and I always made a conscious effort as an administrator, because it's really easy to get disconnected from reality when you sit in those jobs, and I did not want to become a bureaucrat. I wanted to make sure we were making systems work, so I always went out in the field. I think it's very important if you're going to do this work, you have to have a head and heart connection for it. So I always went out in the field to listen, to observe, to understand. And so I was out in the field, and I was in the home of a woman who we were working with. There were issues of signs of maltreatment, but there are a lot of strengths and assets in that home and a great desire on the part of mom to want to take good care of her kids. And so we were putting the right services and supports in her home around her. But it was at that moment, Evan, that I made the conscious decision to become what I'm going to talk to folks about in a couple of weeks, what it meant to be a systems leader, that I had to spend as much time outside of my organization affecting change as I was spending inside my organization. Because one of the things why our nation is so perplexed by these issues, and sometimes I feel like I turned 60 this year and I feel like I'm watching a soap opera sometimes, stuff we were talking about 20 years ago we're still talking about today. And it's because we keep making the fundamental attribution error. We keep thinking if we just change the person, if we just change the family, but yet we've done nothing to change the context within which they live their lives every day, somehow we're going to be successful. And that's just foolishness. It's wrongheaded. People do not live in a vacuum. They live within the context of policies and systems that they themselves cannot control. We all do together as neighbors helping neighbors. So I couldn't believe you brought up that story because it brings back a lot of memories for me of that day. But it was one of those very real moments in my life where I realized I had to move from program thinking to systems change thinking. And it also forced me to confront the realities of inequity, implicit bias, unconscious bias, and racism in our nation, and I could no longer, as a human being, simply act as if those things were not realities that I needed to confront personally and we needed to confront as systems.
Well, Susan, I have to say, I think there are a lot of listeners here in the Rochester area, in Western New York, all throughout the Finger Lakes region, who are skeptical, not because they don't believe the intentions of, for example, our recent and growing anti-poverty initiative or the social sector organizations. It's not that they don't think the intentions are good. I mean, there's no doubt there are wonderful people working on these problems. But they feel a lot like you just described, which is, hey, 20 years ago, we were doing the same thing. Now, it's more severe in Rochester than it was 20 years ago. In fact, Rochester's poverty, as you probably know by now, is among the most severe, especially for children, for people in severe poverty, which is less than half the poverty line, among the most severe of cities of its size in the country. But I think there's a lot of skepticism because we just feel like we have been trying these kinds of things for decades now. So I want to talk this hour about what you've seen that is working, and we'll talk with our guests in studio about their observations as well as what's happening on the local level. But let me start by asking you, is this working anywhere? Is there a city in the country that you can point to say, look at this, look at the turnaround, here's how they did it, or is this a problem just about everywhere?
Well, I think there are some wonderful examples around the nation, but I also want to say that I believe that no real change ever happens through the sense of despair. And I will say that Rochester, the Syracuse area, you build from a position of strength. There are many assets there upon which to build, not just utter despair. But I would point to areas like Live Well San Diego, where they have just completely changed how they're thinking about this, but not because they're trying to think about it through the lens of helping a certain group of people do better in their lives. They're realizing their focus has to be that everyone in San Diego has to flourish if they as a community are going to flourish. They're not just thinking of it through the lens of we've got to solve for these problems, but we've got to make sure that all people in our county can succeed, and that means all people. And I think there's just a different way that I see communities now taking this issue on, not solving for problems, but building for human potential. It's a very different frame. The other thing I'd just say is someone that's been in this work almost 30 years, feeling a lot like a lot of your listeners as you articulated, I've never been more hopeful in my career, Evan. We have what we need now in ways that I did not have when I was the administrator of children and families. What we can now do with data and data analytics, what the neurosciences is now teaching us about what works and what doesn't work, and how we're really understanding root causes in ways that we didn't before. So I can't look back and say what was wrong with us back then. We didn't know what we didn't know. But we know a heck of a lot more now, and now it's incumbent on us to do something with it.
And so, for example, here in Rochester, if you were to come in and just take a look, first of all, at that raw data, as you say, we've got so much better data and an understanding of it. But then, because not every city is the same, not every community is the same, what's the first thing you do in Rochester to say, hey, for whatever you've been doing, we can't change that. But here's one of the most important steps that must be taken, if it hasn't already been taken, that's going to start bringing people out of poverty at a much better rate.
So one of the very first things I'll do, and I know this probably is going to sound crazy to people, but one of the first things that has to happen is, I think, with a real look at the data, with a real look at the research, and looking at this through a neighborhood lens in Rochester, folks are going to have to start seeing one another through eyes of love, and neighbors being neighbors with one another. The community is going to have to make a more conscious decision that we succeed as a community economically and socially. We will be a vibrant community when we truly are connected as a community. And I think the first thing I'll just say, I know it sounds crazy, but where I see around the country these collective impact efforts work is when people come together, not just they're trying to solve problems, but they're trying to achieve a vision. And that vision has to be one of a vibrant Rochester, where we all have the opportunity to succeed, and we are a vibrant community succeeding economically. And when that happens, a lot of the other stuff we'll talk about today starts to fall into place. So the first thing I'll just say, the first thing that has to happen is a conscious community-wide decision that we succeed when everyone succeeds. And that'll be first. And then the other thing I'll just tell you that I find that is so critically important is when people truly do start looking at through the lens of how they're trying to create a healthier community, the understanding that there's no way that Rochester can be a healthier community. Health is more than your primary care. Rochester cannot be a healthier community if it's not focused on what the science now clearly tells us, and that is that the social determinants of health will be the biggest predictor of your success and my success in life than anything that happens in our primary care office. That's access to a quality education, every child, every time. That's access to a transportation system that works not just for me, but for my neighbor as well. And we can talk more about those social determinants, and I'll do more of that when I'm there in a couple of weeks. But I'll tell you, I've been to Rochester. I've seen the assets the community has, and you're only going to get there not through doom and gloom, and we got to fix other people, but through this, through the lens that we're all going to succeed when we all succeed.
My guest is one of the most accomplished people in the country when it comes to work in the social service sector. I could probably spend 15 minutes just going through her resume. Susan Dreyfuss is currently the president and CEO of the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities, and she's going to be here in a couple of weeks. 2 weeks from tomorrow, October 25th, she will be at the Charles Settlement House 100th Anniversary Celebration and Awards Luncheon. And Scott Benjamin, why don't you tell us a little bit about that, what people need to know if they, if they'd like to be there, and what you expect that day?
Well, we are hoping for a big crowd. We're going to be at the Diplomat Banquet Center, and people can still make reservations by contacting us through our website or making reservations, which is cshrock.org. And you can see just in the, or hear in the first few minutes, why we're thrilled that Susan was able to make room on her schedule to come in. Charles Settlement House, as are the other settlements here in Rochester, are part of the Alliance. So I've had the pleasure of meeting and talking with Susan before, and some other very prominent organizations here in town are part of that and are looking at these issues the way Susan has talked about. And we do have at the luncheon, we're going to be honoring a real community champion, Tom Schwartz, that many people may know. He's been involved with many, many human service organizations over the years, a longtime person at RG&E who worked in the community with organizations. So it's a great chance to recognize him for all the work and look back at our history, really. 100 years, we're pretty excited about that.
All right, that's coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow. Then 2 weeks from Thursday, October 26th at the Memorial Art Gallery, the United Way's Community Conversation with Susan Dreyfuss. And Patricia, tell us what we can anticipate for that event.
We're so delighted that our partners at Charles Settlement engaged us in the conversation with Susan and are using her expertise to continue a community conversation about how we in Rochester can build on our assets, work together to create a community where all people, as Susan said, thrive. So as United Way begins our 100th year in 2018, we're going to be doing a lot of looking back to move forward and promote conversations and think about where we need to be most focused, working primarily at the intersections of education, health, and social services, realizing that there are complex systems at play and there are ways to navigate those systems and make them simpler, to bring all those systems together, to better focus on, again, just like Susan said, to create a community where we can all thrive. And we'll be starting that conversation with our leadership donors, our volunteers, and our agency partners that day as an early start to our planning for our future investment process.
All right, I want to take our first phone call of the hour, and then in a moment I'd like to talk to Nikita Matos about her story, and I think her story should do a little to inspire us about what is possible, but also we'll continue the tough conversation. There's a lot of tough questions about what we do about poverty, about making sure everyone in the community has an opportunity to move forward in life. And if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Michelle in Rochester on the phone first. Go ahead, Michelle.
Let me put you on speakerphone here, sorry.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay. I wanted specifically to hear Susan's comments about one of the things that seems to me to be a challenge that we have to overcome I noticed she uses the word neighbor quite a lot, which is a word that I love, and I think I share her understanding of that word. But the beautiful vision she articulates, I think, requires people to have a broader sense of what the word neighbor really means. We hear a lot about privilege hoarding and people sort of self-selecting neighborhoods that really isolate them from the full community. And so what are her thoughts on how we can cultivate a broader community-wide sense of who our neighbors really are?
It's a great question, Michelle. Thank you for the phone call. Susan Dreyfuss, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, Michelle, you in some ways you answered it for me. I think you just said it beautifully. You know, I look at this issue of neighbors, and it's something I think about personally, because as a society, we've become very disconnected from our neighbors. In fact, I would challenge how many people on the phone truly know their physically proximate neighbors, you know, people that truly live just around them. But I think there's a larger question here, and that is our sense of it's love. And I don't think that's a terrible word for us to be using. I think as a nation, I think part of the reason why we're seeing the division that we are is I think we've lost our sense of connectedness and genuine care and love for one another, because we are all in this human experience together. And so I look at areas of the country where there's a conscious effort. And that's what I love about the settlement houses being active and a part of this, because, you know, this is at the core of their heart and mission, is the connectedness of people with other people. But I think where the United Way comes in now, and this just rounds it out, is what are ways that your community can do even more to allow people that don't necessarily live proximate to each other to be more connected to one another, not because they're quote-unquote helping each other, but they're coming together for dialogue, discussion, breaking bread with one another, running in the annual race with one another or the walkathon or whatever it is, but things that give people a sense of connectedness to one another. We've lost relationship with each other. And I think that's a big part of the loneliness we're seeing in our country. A lot of the issues we're seeing with depression and anxiety and people's inability to thrive in their own lives is a sense of connectedness and care for one another. So I think you're right to grab onto that term neighbor. And I think we all have to ask ourselves, personally and then collectively as a community, what does that really mean?
Yeah, I'd like to build on Michelle's point about what being a neighbor really means, and beyond just the proximate neighbors. And I'll ask you a question, Susan, that I've asked myself, which is this. I mean, you talk about living in Waukesha, which is, you know, it sounds like a nice suburb of Milwaukee. You've described it in your presentations as, you know, safe, a nice life, a nice house. And you think about people who are struggling, particularly in urban Milwaukee and the problems they have. And you kind of ask yourself, how come I'm in this position and how come they're not? But should we be... I don't know how to ask. I guess I'll ask you what I've asked myself. Should I move to the suburbs? Should I be doing that? Should I be living in the city? Should I be willing to live amongst neighbors who might be of different income levels? Or do we bubble ourselves too easily, and is that part of the problem?
Yes, it is part of the problem. And it's part of the problem because a lot of the time, this is when I'll talk to your community, too, about, you know, if Rochester is truly serious about what I believe it's truly serious about wanting to achieve, then it's going to have to recognize that simply changing the practices of programs in your community are not going to be enough. You've got to start looking at this now through larger systemic change. Well, what does that mean? Well, you've got to start looking at regulatory policies in your community that create separation and division. You've got to start asking yourself about the ability, especially housing and transportation systems. Do they connect us or do they divide us? So you're absolutely right, because today where I live, in my husband and I have to live in Waukesha because he's a circuit court judge and he's an elected official and we're required to live there. But if we really were serious about this, we would start asking ourselves about our zoning policies. We would start asking ourselves about why is it that what landlords are allowed to do in our inner cities. This was the woman whose home I was in the day I went home and cried in my driveway. When I looked at where she lived and the quality of her rental housing as compared to where I live, where rental housing would never be allowed to fall into that kind of utter disrepair. That's policy. That's something that that woman alone could not solve for. So I get it, but we live where we are today, all of us. But I think if we're really serious about equity, about neighbors, about our love for one another, we've got to look at this not just because we have to start practicing our programs differently. That's the easy part. Are we going to change the regulatory and fiscal decision-making that really continues to perpetuate the division? But it's a great question. It's a question for all of us.
Here's an email from a listener in Pittsburgh. Tim writes to us and says, lots of catchwords and phrases. Care and love are great, but we'd like to hear something more concrete. As you said, we've been hearing this stuff for years. It's not like we live in a country and in a county that doesn't give. We live in an area that gives a ton to charity every year. That's from Tim in Pittsburgh. Susan?
Yeah, so I'd say to Tim, you're absolutely right. And I would also hope for Tim and others, become part of this journey with us. You know, there's a lot of people wanting to observe it, be active and be a part of it. So let's get specific. I'm here today in Louisville, Kentucky, and this whole thing is with health systems from around the country that are here because they're understanding that they cannot get to the level of health that they want to see in their communities if they don't recognize that the socio and economic determinants of health are the biggest predictors of your health and my health. So what are they doing about it? This is something I'll talk to you all about when I'm there in a couple of weeks. They're recognizing that they alone cannot solve for this issue. So they're going into deep partnerships with community-based organizations like Charles Settlement. And they're realizing that as they're working with an individual with a significant health care issue, they also have to be looking at issues of housing, transportation access. They've got to be looking at their behavioral health needs. You know, for years, all health systems have done is look at the primary care needs of someone and making sure they're being provided. Now there's just a growing understanding that if they're going to improve health, if they're going to bend the cost curve of health care, they've got to provide a truly integrated health care experience for people. So what I'd say to your listener is, years ago, this would have been a lot easier because we would have just been talking about, well, just implement this program, just change this service. And that would have been an easy way for me to just talk about this in very concrete ways. What's going to happen now in Rochester is similar to these hospital systems here today. They're realizing it's a much more interconnected systems work that has to be done, the alignment of education, the alignment of health care, the alignment of law enforcement and your court systems. This isn't easy work. I wish it were easy work, but it's happening. It is happening. It's just whether or not, it's just how quickly we make it happen.
All right, I see the phone's ringing, so let's do this. Let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back, and you're going to hear the story of Nikita Matos, who needed the services of Charles Settlement House in her earlier years, and now she's working for Lifespan. I think she's a great story that you ought to hear. And we're also going to take some more of your phone calls. If you want to join the program as we discuss poverty, we discuss the impact of social service organizations, settlement houses, organizations like that. You can do that, 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. On the phone with us is Susan Dreyfus, who is the president and CEO of the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities. She will be here in 2 weeks. First for an event on Wednesday, October 25th, starting at noon. It's the Charles Settlement House 100th Anniversary Celebration and Awards Luncheon. More information online at cshroc.org or Charles Settlement House or charlessettlementhouse.org. There you go. And then on the 26th, she's going to be speaking at the Memorial Art Gallery as part of United Way's Community Conversation and talking about the intersection of health and human services and poverty, equity, and resourcing. So, all kinds of things happening there. We'll take some more of those phone calls, and we'll come back with Susan and more next. Coming up in our second hour, we sit down with Sal Vedette. He is one of the more well-known lost boys of Sudan who came to Rochester in 1996, but he likes to say he was never a lost boy. He was a walking boy. He was a refugee escaping war, disease, and violence. And his life in the United States was a little bit easy, sure, but he wants to make his own country better and stronger. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and before I get to some of your phone calls and comments that have come in online, I want to bring in Nikita Matos. And Nikita, why don't you tell us a little bit about growing up and how you ended up with Charles Settlement House and a little bit about those times before we get to where you are now in life.
I started at Charles Settlement House when I was like 5 or 6. It was a place in a neighborhood where my mother, I don't believe she started, maybe she needed a Thanksgiving basket. She went there somehow. She needed resources or help. And then we started going to programs. So I went to the after school program. I went to the teen club. I was on a basketball team for 3 years. Then I became a counselor in training. And then in 2001, I started working in a senior center. And then working in the senior center, I worked with developmental disability, with aging adults. Some had disabilities, and it was like a diverse population, which puts me to where I'm in now, lifespan, working with aging adults with developmental disabilities. If I didn't meet those people at the senior center, I wouldn't have been able to know that I enjoy working with that population. Going to Charles House, just meeting a diverse population of people from all different races, backgrounds, it gave me hope that I can be, it's okay to be different, because I always felt different from my family growing up in the inner city. And how could I say?
Well, can I ask you, just can I go back to those 5 and 6 year old years that you had? You know, maybe because you're probably forming some of your first memories, and Charles Settlement House is part of some of your earliest memories in life. But what do you remember about? Did you ever ask, you know, why am I going to Charles, or what's going on in our lives? Did you understand, you know, the effort that your mother was putting in, and what poverty was? Did you understand that?
At that age, not really. I just went there, and it was just somewhere to go after school and to meet new people, I guess. It was a relationship bonding, I still have a relationship with Steve, who I met when I was 5, who was my coach, who was somebody who gave me encouragement and that I can be a basketball player. I can be anything that I want. I didn't know that helping people can be a career, kind of.
And kind of like you're doing at Lifespan now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Helping others.
Is that what you want to do long term?
Yeah, I was started to go to MCC a couple of years before I had children, and I still have to finish a couple of classes. But I wanted to be a social worker because I met a person at Charles House who now has her master's in social work, and before that, I didn't know what social work was.
And so now when you think about, you know, back to your childhood days, and you think about maybe other kids who are growing up in similar circumstances, you know, you didn't realize what you could do until you had some help, some coaches, some mentors who were saying, hey, this is an avenue for you. You can do this. Or you've got skills. You like working with people. You know, maybe this works here. Now you're at Lifespan. How much do you think we miss the fact that kids who are growing up in tougher circumstances don't always know what is possible? I mean, sometimes we think, well, you're not choosing to do this, or how come you don't choose to go to college? How come you don't work on this? And it sounds to me like some kids just don't even know what's possible at times because they don't have people helping them see that. Tell me what you think about that.
What I think about that is kind of like a grasshopper mentality, like looking. If I didn't go to Charles House, I wouldn't have seen people who don't look like me, which made me want to understand them more, and them looking at me and seeing the potential in me. And if I would have just been in a neighborhood and just continue to see what I seen, I wouldn't be where I'm at now. Meaning that it's nice to see people who don't look like you, or people who's grown up on a different side of town, who have a different outlook.
Well, Nikita, I know you, Tell me if what my interpretation of what you're saying is accurate, or tell me if it's not. What I'm hearing you say is, you know, you saw people who didn't look like you, mm-hmm. white people, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you saw they came from a different part of town, wealthier areas, but they came there because they cared about you. And what you saw was people who didn't look like you growing up could also still love you and care about you, and weren't necessarily just an other that didn't care about you and wanted to be far away, that they wanted to be there, that they were invested in you, that they cared about you.
Yes.
That also is that story that you tell then, if that's how you felt, that's actually something I've never heard on this show. But I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we forget that when we are segregated often by our own choices, sometimes not, mm-hmm. in this way, the assumptions that we make mm-hmm. about other people, and it's not just what white people assume about people of color. It's mm-hmm. people of color feeling like, well, no one cares about me. Mm-hmm. And I'm really inspired by that. I really appreciate you telling that story. So how's work now? Is it good?
It's great. I love what I do. I love helping the developmental disability population, because it's just a humbling experience. When they smile, I smile. And learning to let them, like if they need help zipping their jacket, I start it, but they finish it. You know, not doing for them, but giving them the opportunity to do it.
Do you love those little moments?
Yes.
When you see that?
It's small.
When you see that, that's awesome. I hope you continue on this great path. And let me also make something else clear here, because I really am moved by that story. But Scott Benjamin, I do not want to frame that story as, you know, white saviors and all this stuff. I want it to say we do separate ourselves, and we need for everyone to realize that there can be love and outreach no matter who we are and what our background is.
Well, absolutely. And our workforce, we're actually proud that about half of the people that work for us come from the neighborhoods that we serve as well. But it is a diverse staff. And I know when I was talking to Nikita before this program, she had mentioned in summer camp or after school, I'm not sure which one, but sometimes college students came in and were volunteers. And that was one of those aspects of people that, you know, she hadn't been exposed to in her own family, at least. So we try to make a very conscious effort to have a staff that really does represent all sorts of backgrounds and socioeconomic status and so on, really. And I think if it's done, you know, we do hear sometimes the give and take of, you know, whether it's who ought to be teachers, who ought to be social workers, and, you know, these kinds of things. I think when it gets back to the relationships, and as Susan, you know, dared use the L word, love, you can actually break through so many of those stereotypes and have real connections that make a difference.
Oh, I'm not afraid of the L word. We drop it on this program all the time. Love is a beautiful thing, and we need a lot more love in the world right now. So that before I grab a phone call, Gloria in Canandaigua, I'm going to come to you next. I just want Susan Dreyfus to tell us what she thinks about hearing this story. Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, first one, Nikita, just absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And
you know,
as I'm listening to her, I'm also thinking about your caller from Pennsylvania saying, okay, get specific. Well, I'll get specific. When I listen to a story like that, one of the things the science absolutely is very clear about is children need to have caring adults in their lives. And we've got to be very conscious as a community how that happens. So, for instance, if I were in Rochester right now, one of the policies I'd absolutely be driving for is recognizing that the most caring adults in a children's life is first and foremost their parents. And you don't know what you don't know. If you've grown up in generational poverty, if you've grown up where you haven't seen success, and so you don't believe it's possible for you, I would be investing in comprehensive home visitation for very young children, so that their parents can truly be their very best selves and those kids get the best start in life. The other thing is you'd start to really look at how children have the opportunity to have caring adults in their life in normalized ways, as Nikita did, right? And again, we lose sight of how that happens. That happens through churches. That happens through schools. That happens through Charles Settlement.
But we've got to make sure that we're really recognizing that. But the other thing that she said that is really important is that those adult relationships, those relationships with others, as she talked about, people who were different from her, it did two things. I would contend that for the people who were the others, she also blessed their lives as well. We are wired as human beings, and the science is clear. We are wired for altruism. We are wired for caring for one another. We want to help other people, and it's part of our whole DNA and makeup. And Charles Settlement is creating those opportunities for the others, as Nikita talked about them, to practice that spirit of altruism. And now you watch Nikita paying it forward in the way she's practicing altruism with persons who live with developmental disabilities. And the other thing I would just say is we've got to, whether it's our schools, whether it's our law enforcement systems, whatever it is, are the systems that are around people giving them the opportunity to see their future self. Because if people can't see their future self, they don't believe there's a future they can influence. And so they just sit there thinking, well, nothing's possible for me. Mm. So there's power in Nikita's story that I hope everybody was really listening to in terms of how that life experience changed her and how she is today. Because I'll also say something else with Nikita. Nikita, I'll bet there are a lot of people in your family and in your neighborhood who have watched you, who now believe it's possible for them as well.
Yeah, I would agree. And then also with the relationship building is that the people that I met through Charles House, I still have a relationship with them. And it doesn't happen overnight. It was just by getting to know them, by continuing talking to them, meeting with them, and pouring into each other is what builds relationship, and then be able to trust them. So I'm thankful for that.
Well, I want to get back to some of your phone calls and listeners. You want to join the program as we discuss poverty, as we discuss ways to bring our community forward. 844-295-TALK, toll free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. In Canandaigua, this is Gloria. Go ahead, Gloria.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Susan, thank you so much for the work you're doing. I grew up in Rochester, lived in Milwaukee for 33 years, and worked at the Hamilton School District as a school social worker. Moving back to this area, the biggest thing that got to me was that, in the Milwaukee area, there's a much more of a sense of community. And here I kept thinking, especially in Canandaigua, and Canandaigua is a lovely, beautiful place. Everything is private. And I don't know if you have worked with or are working with the Urban Ecology Center in the Milwaukee area, because the things that they are promoting sound exactly what you are.
I don't work with them specifically. I'm aware of their work. And okay. I think everybody's just starting to understand that, again, it's back to this connectedness.
Yes.
And the things that are separating us. And it's not a question of, to me, it's not about conservative or liberal. I've worked for a Republican and a Democrat governor.
Yeah.
I don't see the partisanship in these things. What I know is we cannot continue to afford, as a nation, the costs that we are incurring through the lens of chronic perpetuating poverty in our nation. We can't afford the cost of our healthcare system, where 5% of the population drives 50% of the expenditures. And I think what people are realizing is it's not just about quote unquote fixing people. Mm-hmm. We've got to change the environments within which people live out their lives, and make sure that the access and opportunity that my four little grandchildren have need to be the access and opportunity that Nikita's children are going to have. And until that
Absolutely.
Day happens,
yeah.
right, I think we'll be forever perplexed by these issues. That doesn't mean that people take that and say, oh, then we're just going to be giving people things. No, I'm not saying that. Access and opportunity. My grandchildren have access to a quality education system every day. My grandchildren have access to food systems in their communities that work. My grandchildren have access to quality and affordable housing. And I, again, what people then do with access is that issue of self-determination and self-will, like in Nikita, who's choosing the access and opportunity she's been given, and she's doing something with it. I'm just saying that when you start leveling that playing field of access and opportunity for people, you'll watch everyone thrive.
Yeah. I very much encourage you to read the book about the Urban Ecology Center that just came out.
Thank you.
Okay.
Gloria, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. And listeners, we got a little bit more time. And before the hour's up again, we'll make sure you know about the events that Susan Dreyfus, who's on the line with us, is going to be a part of 2 weeks from now. So we'll make sure you're set on that. But you've got a couple of lines open, 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And Susan, again, I asked you earlier on, you know, can you point to a city, can you point to a place in the country where something is really working, things are turning, poverty is turning? And, you know, that's a slow process. That's going to be a very interesting question a decade from now, I think, here in Rochester and around the country. But can you point to individual projects, even in small neighborhoods, things like Bridge Meadows in Portland, those kinds of things that, you know, that I think you guys have been involved with that help,
yep.
that maybe address, I don't want to say a small problem, but a specific place in a specific community that you've been able to maybe find some results?
Yeah, let me give you a couple of those, because they happen organically, you know. It's Rochester will have its roadmap, just as in Portland, Oregon, they have theirs. And so Bridge Meadows is a wonderful example. It gets to this larger issue we're talking about today. It's a very simple view, and that is that they want to see generations living together within neighborhood. So children who are living in foster care or who have been adopted, they create multi-generational housing where you have older adults, and one of the biggest things with older adults that we find in our nation is issues of isolation and not having the opportunity to practice that altruism in their lives. Well, they create these multi-generational communities through housing where older adults are helping families, families are helping older adults, children and youth are with older adults, and older adults are with them. It's a neighborhood. It's creating neighborhood and the generations coming together. That's an example. Pillsbury House in Minneapolis, Minnesota. They were a settlement house similar to Charles. And one of the things that they recognized as they're doing their work within the community, they do so many things that give youth and families opportunities for success, you know, apprenticeships, and like I've been in there where they the youth in the community have a bike shop where they are fixing bikes and reselling them in the community, learning skills, learning trades. But then they also recognize one of the gaps was access to food, right? You'd be surprised at how many food deserts we still have in our nation. Communities that are the only grocery store they have is a community market where the milk price is double what I pay in my grocery store. Well, Pillsbury House is building a grocery store in a food desert. You know, they're the ones building it, but they're building it as a health center as well. They're building it as a community convening place. They're taking something as normal as a grocery store and making it something where folks can go to, not just to buy food, but to learn about nutrition, to learn about healthy cooking, to have access to classes and other forms of education, financial literacy and coaching. So it's these things that I watch, and then the other thing I'm watching is organizations that are now starting to do work in deeper partnership with education systems. So Baltimore, Maryland, Children's Guild, you watch how they are actually changing education in partnership with education so that all kids within that school have the opportunity to learn and to thrive. So, you know, you just watch this stuff playing out around the country. Is there a specific formula? No. But what I'll share with people in a couple weeks, there are certain things that you see in these efforts that are common to them. But how they're doing it is different by community.
All right, let me grab some phone calls. Caleb in Pittsford is next. Go ahead, Caleb.
Okay, hi. It's funny that you just mentioned a community bike shop, because we cleaned out our garage yesterday and brought two of our bikes that our kids outgrew to Rochester Community Bikes today downtown. And when I dropped them off, Dan, the guy that runs it there, who's also been in a TED Talk, wanted to give me a tour. And as you tour around there, everybody is so happy and turned on. And I think that we are so much happier and turned on, not to mention the benefit we give to kids. And it started because he and some of his friends were working in a soup kitchen, and somebody came in and needed their bike tire filled up. So they filled up the bike tire, and then word got out that those guys will help you with your bike. And now they give away, I don't know, at least 2,700 bikes a year that people donate. And so there just is such opportunity when we will focus on others and be connected to them instead of separated. So thank you for this program.
Caleb, thank you.
No, that's awesome.
That's being a neighbor.
I love this one. You know, what faith communities can do. I've got stories of faith communities where the traditional men's group, right, on Saturdays, it will be typically women who are driving older used cars, can go there, and they will perform oil changes and filters, but in the process, check the tires, maybe there's some problem they got to work on, but in the process of doing that, they're seeing the humanity of one another. You see what I'm saying? They're not sitting in judgment of each other. They're sitting in a way that they're loving each other. They're seeing one another's humanity through a sense of connectedness. I love those kinds of stories. I don't want to act Pollyannish like somehow that fixes it, because this is complex work, and having the United Way play the kind of leadership role that they are daring to play to truly start getting underneath root causes, to create the intersections and connections of systems that are going to have to happen for this to all work, is critically important. I'm so appreciative of the United Ways across the country and United Ways in Rochester, who are saying it's not enough for us just to raise money and distribute it. We've got to know that we're raising money and distributing it in ways that are making our community stronger and healthier, and we've got to provide a larger leadership in our community in order for that to happen. But these are just the kinds of things that start to happen when the focuses of places like Rochester switch from just thinking it's about a perpetuation of programs to truly trying to change systems in a fundamental way, and doing it in ways that bring the community together. You can't put a price tag on it.
Yeah, I know, about our last 90 seconds, so and unfortunately couldn't get through all the phone calls. A lot of great feedback this hour, but you've got a chance to meet Susan Dreyfuss later this month in a couple of weeks, and there's a couple of events, so I'll ask our guests to tell you what's coming up again. Wednesday, October 25th, starting at noon, Scott Benjamin from Charles Suttleman House. What's coming up?
Our 100th anniversary luncheon, and Susan will be the keynote speaker, as well as an award we'll be giving that day. The bishop will be there, because we originally were founded by Catholic laywomen, so it's going to be a great event. And you can go to cshroc.org to get more details and to register.
Okay, and coming up on the 26th, there is an event at the Memorial Art Gallery, United Way's Community Conversation with Susan Dreyfuss. And what do you hope comes out of that, Patricia? Tell me what you think in about 30 seconds or so. What do you hope comes out of that conversation?
We hope to re-spark a conversation amongst the community about how people can come together truly under with United Way and with our partners to work together to create that spirit of love and caring for one another, to identify the most critical issues in our community, to talk about how systems can interplay in this as well, and spark off our 100th year to think about moving forward together and how we can really tackle some of these problems in a lasting way, not by promoting programs that work, although those are at the core, but how to work together across systems to really put families at the center, to care about one another, and get results that will last a lifetime.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate that. Patricia, Scott Benjamin, Nikita, good luck to you, and thank you for sharing your story and inspiring us this hour. Thank you so much. And Susan Dreyfuss, who is the president and CEO of the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities, we'll see you in Rochester in a couple of weeks. Thanks for the time today.
Can't wait. See y'all soon.
All right, short break. Much more connections is straight ahead.